Coming to you from cities all over the world, produced in Aotearoa, New Zealand, this is the Places for Good podcast. We bring you the designers, planners, and placemakers who shape the shared spaces of tomorrow, from stories of the past to visions for the future. We talk pride of place wherever you are. I'm your host, Boopsie Moran.
Our guest today is a play systems innovator for Healthy Families Waitakere, which is a part of the Great Sport Waitakere program. She works alongside children, community, and stakeholders to support them to think differently about the underlying cause of poor health, and in response, together they co-create and invite more play opportunities. She works in a diverse range of settings to improve access to play through influencing planning, urban design policy, and investment, so every person, young and old, can reclaim their childhood. It is with huge respect and thanks that I warmly welcome today's guest coming to us from West Auckland. Please welcome Bea Enriquez.
Kia ora, Bootsy. Thanks for including me into this podcast today. It's been great.
Well, it's so good that you had time to see us here in a level 3 step 2 lockdown in Tamaki Makaurau. But let's just go right into discussing your role with Sport Waitakere and how there's a fair bit of co-design and testing. Are you able to share more about your systems approach and how you might plan to scale that across Tamaki Makaurau or just what you do in your area?
Yeah, so with Healthy Families, there's about 10 sites across the nation. And what we do is we look at reducing the risk of underlying causes of poor health, but that's through the whole co-design method and systems change thinking that we kind of look at as our ethos. When it comes down to it, a lot of the things that we've been doing have been collaborating with our stakeholders who are like our huge decision makers in the system. They can be across the mark. You know, they don't have to be in the food space. They can be in the play space and they can be in the transport space. It's just collaborating with whoever has that willing appetite to actually even listen to the community that we work with. And when we work alongside the community, we have that role of uplifting their voices to be heard to these stakeholders.
Yeah, so that's, I use kind of the holistic term, right? So you're looking at so many parts of a person. And I guess that leads into our first question usually that we go through, which is if you were mayor of the city, what radical revisions might you have or immediate policy changes would you love to implement? Because when you're working through health and transport and play, imagine if you were mayor and you had a say and a vision for those areas. What would you think to do in there, those places?
Well, honestly, if I just thinking about all the recent things that have happened in the last 2 years in my role, one big thing when we look at the systems of policy change, practices and resources, all of those top system change issues, the biggest thing would definitely be shifting the investment to be more community centric.
Well, I guess like you have some micro grants they do in Melbourne and overseas, definitely in the States. That's a thing we don't really do often in New Zealand, like micro grants proposed from community groups and then slowly worked bottom up.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Innovating Streets had their trial to do this, but now that we've done it as mayor, I think aside from these side funds, whether they come from transport funds, the real question is what type of policy? So when you allocate funding, would you allocate it? Who would you make the authority to distribute the funds and where would you allocate them to that you think would be potentially see the most results?
So definitely the most results in regards to placemaking, in regards to urban design and all those other factors, it would definitely come from the neighborhood local level. So from all the insights that I've learned from play, there's no better sort of advice or influence that you could get in designing a neighborhood if it's not for the people that actually live there. Children have like the craziest imaginations, and if you kind of capture them, they actually can solve a lot of the neighborhood problems that they already have. They understand that they need permission to play, they need space, and they need time. And for that, in order for that to happen, they have to have people that listen to them. And that's not just their parents, because you can always one-sided and say, oh, but it's the parents' decision overall. But if you provide a safe and inviting space for the parents to let their children be free, then there's more than likely you're going to have way more people using public spaces out there. I'd say that those are the type of people you want to start listening to from the neighborhood, from those residents that have lived there for 20 plus years. They're the ones that can bring about what actually would be great for their neighborhoods and public spaces to change. And I guess you can kind of shift the power to them. So, yeah.
Well, you told me once about this cupboard you built.
Yeah.
And that was a group. I feel like a lot of members of public and the children were all involved. Can you share that again? About, it was like an afternoon cupboard of play items, I feel like.
For instance, one of the things that we trialed was this thing called a play portal, but we've renamed it to Gear Up because originally it was called Gear Up. So we co-designed with a bunch of local schools, understood what their play needs were in the neighborhood, why play was decreasing in that neighborhood. And trust me, I grew up in that same neighborhood and knew that it did decrease. So you have those insights to begin with, right? And then understanding where they're actually playing and where they're actually hanging out, to then matching it to their needs. And you found out that these kids after school would hang out outside a fruit shop where you have the best ice cream in summer, and they would just be waiting there getting picked up by their parents with nothing to do. And sometimes their parents can be late, sometimes things come up, or they're with their friends but they're just standing around, maybe looking at their phones, maybe doing other things. But that's when we partnered up with the local fruit shop owner, Kieran, and she was amazing. She actually ended up assisting us and co-creating with the children on what the stuff should be inside that box. And every afternoon, from when Kieran opens up her shop, she takes it out with her husband. They let the kids play and use it as much as they want to. It was a really funny thing about questioning whether things would get vandalized. None of it got vandalized. And I even gave Kieran the autonomy of how she wanted to manage it. And I think that's really key in providing power to the community and how they see fit. So,
So if you gave Kieran the autonomy, how do you protect that investment? So over time, let's say that Gear Up box stays there for 5 years. It's the operations cost,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
But I guess if you place that there and she's doing it for free, the operations cost is low and you're just doing that investment for the product, which makes it a sustainable model. How do you find other hosts like that? Or have you ever done that? Are you on the lookout for more?
It's funny that you say that. We're actually on the ground right now. I'm really bogged down with work on trying to locate more sites in West Auckland because we've managed to secure some funding. And me and my team have looked and scoped all the way just based on all our relationships. And we know who's there that's easy, that knows our organization really well, that just would snap up a box and know and trust them for sure that they would do a great job with it. So in the list of things, we've approached a local library. We've also approached local sports clubs. We've looked at open green spaces. One of them I actually really, really want to test out next to a pataka. So I did a cold call the other day and just called the woman who was in charge of a pataka near a green space. And then I found out she's also a home-based ECE teacher who will possibly already want to have it because she wants to have it for her kids that she teaches, but also for the community to use. So
a pataka
is a... Yeah.
What is the definition of it?
I have to explain myself. Pataka is a community pantry, and that word is sort of, it goes back to Indigenous ties of how Māori stored their food. So, yeah.
So she's already managing a place where people are dropping off dry goods and food, sometimes from their garden.
Yeah.
And so it's a perfect fit next to it. Have you ever approached Corbin's Estate?
Yeah, actually, that's another site where we've actually come in contact with, and we've given them an MOU to see if they want to sign up. And that's honestly like a popular bike path. And that's why we've really asked Corbin's, hey, you guys have such a huge space. The community knows you well. And you're right next to this amazing bike path that everybody follows. It would be great to have this sort of thing here because it can tie in more things to do in these spaces. And that's exactly what the kids want. I remember most of the co-designs I've had with the kids, they've always mentioned Corbin's as an iconic space. And I have asked, can you go there on your own? I mean, they do say maybe with friends or family, but at least they know about it. Like it's not like it's one of those things.
It's a community hub. Yeah. And I think it has way more opportunities than the library that's up the road as far as the safe.
Yeah, for sure.
Car free access to a safe car free space.
Yeah.
And so my other question is, through your initiatives, what are some of the reactions from the locals? So let's go back to that Innovating Streets project. What do the community, do they love it? How is that a human level filling their bucket or bringing joy? And what are some of the, when they see this happening, local authorities think, police or government officials, for your initiatives that you're promoting play?
Well, there's two sides to the coin. And I honestly thought in my gut feel, this is the right thing that we should test out. I remember trying to figure out who can volunteer for this. And honestly, the people that put their hand up in the first trial are like the bravest people ever to even want to start this without this whole process even existing in council. But when I did a call out on social media, trying to find some of my neighborhood streets on community groups, some of the backlash I was getting on the posts advertising based on like Kelston Play Street, some of the backlash I was getting, it was just awful. Like some of them are like, why are we promoting these kids when they'll get run over? There was so much health and safety that kept flagging up that I was thinking maybe our community isn't ready. But then actually, the longer I waited for more people to add on their streets and nominate their streets and nominate people, that actually outweighed the backlash. Like you knew back in your childhood that everyone in urbanized settings did like play on the street. And I think that just held power to the fact that this is something that Auckland needs. And we do know that families do have their sort of illegal barbecues on the road with their neighbors. So why not make this a process that's easy for everybody so no one gets mad, you know?
So you're finding like door to door, because also with the COVID response across the world, that door to door, one-on-one, face-to-face is a big community builder, but also it's ignoring the internet backlashes as facts.
Exactly.
And I think, how do we, similar to your friend in Piha, how do we get the community on the ground to relay that message outside of the platforms that exist in social media? So knowing what people at the top who are funding this, what are some ways that you could help community aside from your projects existing, but in your role or the way you see it having rolled out in the past to bridge that relationship where policy is driven by sometimes internet backlash, right?
So how do you get
the weight of the people door to door and their actions to supersede that backlash? It's just a thought.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that just goes back to some of my community champions, like highlighting them and pedestaling them and raising their voice. Because if not for them putting their hand up, and then testing this, and this is the beauty of co-design and that whole systems change method that Healthy Families does, is that we test things because we have to be brave. If we fail, if we get learnings, if we get successes, you know? So once we get to test like how successful whatever learnings we get, we still elevate that to upstairs, to the decision makers. We don't, even if it's a failure, if it's a thing, we kind of call it a learning, right? Like you want to understand what the process is to even get there. And
it's like a timeliness, right? Because you had that critical mass, like we all had it before COVID. Yeah. And it would be great if we didn't have this kind of lull, right? So we have this lull. Sure. And we're trying to, I don't know how to get them again. So we had them all going. We finished the project and we write a report, right?
Yeah.
And I've been working really hard to formalize video reporting. So imagine if you could have a meeting and you have the video footage from your play street. Everyone loves it. And then you even go person to person and that's enough. Whereas if you do, it's like we pretend counselors are able to read the amount of paperwork.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, like an example was to really bridge that gap, I always suggest putting them in the same room together and getting them to learn from each other's experiences. So you've got, for instance, your community member having backlash against council because all council wants to do is take, 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 ask, 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 do, 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 tick, tick boxes. Whereas on the other side, council and every decision maker up there wants to just do good for the community, but they don't know how much paperwork it goes into that, or they don't know how much time and effort gets put into that. So my big suggestion, and I've done this previously in a lot of my projects, was that I'd always put them in a room. Like for instance, the play streets process, the application process before we changed it for the pilot, I got one of us traffic management stakeholders in the room. So Jenna was in the room and I invited the community member and I got her to fill out all the paperwork with her. And we booked that meeting for an hour. It ended up being 3 hours long. And it was crazy. And Jenna, like, so respectfully still stayed. And that's just bridging whanaungatanga, which is trust, you know, to the community to show them that they're actually here for them to bring about change. And that is like high regard. And that great person story. At the top, like, as in Jenna on that side, I think from that day onwards, she just realized, we got to change the application form. This is not working for me. This is not working for them. How do we do it better for that community? And the same goes for like when you're celebrating wins, let's talk about what our learnings are as well. And that's the same thing where we invited Jacqueline, our Auckland Council counterpart, to come and sit for dinner with the community champions to hear their stories because she couldn't make it to all of them, right? And I was always the community facing person. So it was always good to put them together so they can actually put a face to the person who's been leading the project. So
were there any quotes or sound bites from the community where the council member, like even when Jenna was doing the paperwork, let's say, where there was a quote where, wow, that's really difficult, that popped out at either the forms part or the group meeting? Aha moment for government.
I wouldn't say there was anything. I mean, there definitely would have been quotes, but that whole Jenna meeting happened about almost 2 years ago. But all I could say is I still remember how Jacqueline and Jenna had reacted when they started realizing. Like, you can see the aha moment. You can see that their eyes sort of shone through and realized. And then they started nodding their head way more in understanding. There was even a moment that I think it was Jenna or Jacqueline. There was a moment when they would actually forget about what time it was, and that it was getting late. And, you know, time just flew by.
When you're solving problems and you can feel that you're empowering someone beside you in human, you will go that extra length.
Yeah, and you do. And I think that's the enriching part of Māoridom, because their whole ethos and purpose is to do tikanga well, and which are, you know, values, and to do this with face-to-face opportunities, because that's how you do feel human to somebody.
Can you imagine if it was just an application and they just said no, whereas you've already found the source, the human, you know you want to go forward. So it's just about the introduction at that point, the whakawhanaungatanga, then getting to know one another.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think, how can people in the community or those at the top decision be an ally other than just the forms? Is there ways that they could do it, continue it on this path? Any other ways that you could see the people in those back end offices, how could they improve other than the sit down is a great story. Mm. And I think that's what dreams are really made of. But one of my ideas in the past was like traffic management plans and first aid should be funded. Yeah. Like, so if you find that community champion who's keen, that let's say even the woman who's running your gearboxes, that's each year she's just given the amount of money she needs to keep her first aid up.
Yeah.
And for someone who's keen to do the streets, that, maybe TMP.
They get the traffic management. Yeah. They get the traffic management training. And that's exactly what I see as the future for these sorts of roles in the community. We want to call them play champions, and that's what Sport New Zealand loves to call them as well. But it's sort of like, how do we continually capability build them? How do they sort of plant the seed in the community so others can learn as well? So, in West Auckland, it's unfortunately more transient than normal suburbs. So how do they pass on sort of the knowledge curve and leave that seed in there, but also carry it to wherever else they're going? It's crazy. Like, we're getting one of the play streets we've tested in. I think most of the families are leaving. They're moving house and they've let me know. And we're actually in that midst of trying to come up with a plan on how do we test out this transition period. Do we introduce something afterwards they've left, or do we introduce something and leave it to somebody else that's going to stay there?
I think induction, right? So induction, a quality induction and succession planning for these, because the process and progress you created through your play streets in the last years is huge for Auckland and New Zealand, right? So I think to sustain that quality of delivery and include your learnings, it's that induction. And so if you have it tight, you're not scared of when people come and go because you have it tight.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So for instance, one of the scaling things that we are doing, we were given some funding for delivery, but I'm already paid to do that. So why would I use that money? I don't need the money anymore. So one of the things that me and my boss talked about was, why don't we use that money to fund somebody that was doing all the stuff I was doing to backbone what I was doing for play streets earlier this year, and get them to sort of capability and lead people and have them trained. And then they become sort of a prototype in our eyes, or some that resource or investment that if it works in our organization, maybe there might have to be a permanent role in there for communities to keep applying, or maybe that person works better to be paid in council, and we're just proving the fact that this person works better in council, or do they work better in a community hub? We don't know, but that's what we're going to test out next.
Because growing up for me, I grew up in the States, and it's happened there as well. I grew up in the 90s, and we had a Parks and Recs guy that was there. He was there like Monday to Friday, 3 to 5, funded by the city. That was huge. So
what do they do?
He just opened the place and put out the pool table balls, put out all the play stuff every Monday through Friday. That's all he did. Played with the kids.
Exactly. Easy, right?
Basically, it sounds like free after school care. Yeah, it's a play worker.
It's a play worker, pretty much. Like, that's who they have in the UK. And I don't understand why we don't have a model like that right now. I mean, you can go and rely back to the same old of having eyes on the street, but we know that a society is not like that anymore. And it's a bit more isolated.
Ooh, so tell me about this play worker in the UK that you know about. How does that work? Have you heard of
it? They hire somebody, especially in those risky playgrounds. You know, they let kids set things on fire, build things with hammers and saws. And it's literally, it's a breeding ground for like the worst health and safety issues in the world, but the UK allows it. And then you have your play worker there, but he doesn't interfere in what the kid does like a normal parent would, that wants to cotton ball their kids, but they sort of watch from afar, just as the gatekeeper between the parents and the children, but allowing the children to enable themselves and be be able to light fires and be destructive and everything else. So their role is completely to just be the eyes, but not interfere.
Well, and I think it's trust and consistency, right? Because I knew at 3:05, 3:15, the door opens.
Yeah, exactly. You knew,
and
right?
Nowadays, yeah.
And there's different types of play workers in the world. Like, I remember listening to another podcast about how in Japan, in regards to the COVID response, they actually got council play workers to go in to clean the playgrounds every 30 minutes after use, and the families in that neighborhood can book in on an online system on using it. So isn't that great? Like, that is such a really, really high status way of really addressing COVID and the decline in play at the same time.
Health and safety protocol, eh, that's in place in their head, and the, they have a high cleanliness. Even the people that push you in the subway that wear gloves, it's just all about respect.
It's about respect. Yeah.
So what makes you know your home, whether it be out in West Auckland or you're not, if you're visiting somewhere else and then you hear something and that reminds you of where you came from? It could be both directions, kind of.
Mm. Yeah. I would say number one would always be the bird sound. I mean, in New Zealand, particularly, especially in West Auckland, if you're surrounded by bush, and even when you're, I mean, this might be a long time ago, but when people come into the arrivals lounge in New Zealand and they play the bird song, like, that is, you can hear the tuis, you just feel at home. And, you know, they'll play Pōkare Kareana, which is like a popular Māori song, and you just feel at home. Like, that's just how it is. But if I had to think about it, I want to divide it between when I was younger to when I'm older. And when I was younger, there were so much more children laughing and playing outside. But now it's getting less. You know, you kind of want to pop your head out of the window when you do hear a kid outside. I know, like, I do hear some kids now, but I like look over in the window and I just see that they're still within their limits. They're not actually outside roaming. Other things that feel like that sound like home are pretty much like dogs barking in West Auckland, sometimes like a boy racer. Sometimes I say that sometimes I'm being kind. and then you've got teenagers blasting music on their phones. Mm-hmm. That's still popular. And if it was a weekend and if I was at my mum's, it would be her on a karaoke machine.
Nice.
So, yeah, for sure. But yeah, it would definitely be helicopters as well. That's always on the community pages, isn't it? West
Auckland. It's funny because I did this jokes board and I missed hearing laughs or someone read it out loud and I would look out the window and now it's so quiet because no one was pausing. Yeah, I did only to level 4 and then for porch placemaking because we would try about 100 jokes a night to get to the one we had. So I wanted to go high. So, but how about smells or... Can you think of smells? Or taste. I like taste too, of home.
Smells would definitely be... So I'm going to divide it again when I'm younger to when I'm older. But when I was younger, like, you could smell the sun on your skin. If I could explain that, it's this weird part of New Zealand where, you know, the ozone layer doesn't really exist. You probably get burnt and you just smell the skin. Burnt skin on your arm. And then you've got, you know, things start smelling greeny and bushy if you're out in West Auckland. I know that my childhood home was next to a pond, so it kind of smelled like that as well. You could also smell like the bark when you were younger, but, you know, now when you're an adult, it's a bit sad. And, like, sometimes you can only smell your own perfume or just, like, plain old air, and then now that it's COVID, you can probably just smell a mask. So.
Yeah, it's like mud, eh? It's the smell of wet mud when you're a kid. But I think one of my theories is that real empathetic designers or people who work around play and just city building, we have a keen sense of nostalgia.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we're creating that nostalgia and atmosphere again.
Yeah.
Whether it's for adults in their free time or for children. And so that's why I think this question is so important. And you are automatically dividing it between your adult life and your childhood life, and also noticing what you're missing.
Yeah.
It might not be adult or modern. It just might be the timeline of time.
It is the timeline of time.
So your adult life isn't missing things that you don't like anymore. You're missing things that the urban environment is not delivering.
Exactly. Yeah, that could be, that could definitely be it. It's just not delivering it anymore. And that goes for the whole, I can't hear kids laughing and playing as much as I did.
And you can't smell the ocean or the the sun, or you just smell.
I just smell my perfume or the city or the boy racer that drives past. Like, and it's so sad because it's also a part of perspective. It's like, if you really want to just be mindful about the smells, or are you just passing by and smelling things because your nose needs air to breathe? Like,
and when I was a teacher in West Auckland, I was surprised how many kids didn't go to the beach.
Yeah.
And that's, I would love public transport to you, because Motorway is an easier drive than Piha, right?
Yeah.
Affordable way for the young people of West Auckland to touch the sea.
I think exactly.
It's a perspective that is totally ignored in a lot of cities.
Yeah, it is definitely an issue. And because I work in an RST, which is a regional sports trust, some of my drowning prevention workmates that work with Drowning Prevention Trust, they kind of think it's because of, we don't have many of our children knowing how to swim. So you've got parents fearing them going onto the ocean as well. It's not just accessing, having transport going there and giving children the freedom to just head over there. It's also like the capability building of how kids could even swim. And when you look at like the whole of Auckland, West Auckland kind of only has West Wave as a recreational swimming facility. We don't have many like North Shore, and I think South Auckland has way more than us as well. So it's kind of like that equity of access to swimming pools and then to the ocean, because we've got beautiful beaches out here.
Yeah, I asked, I did it in my class. I did it as like, oh, let's do it. Read a book or something about the sea, and I was describing it, the taste and sounds, and they did not, and they were 10 or 9. Yeah. And I was like, wow, that's a smell in the air that you need to experience, and however I can help you get there.
Yeah. And I remember co-designing with a couple of kids, and it wasn't about the ocean, but I found out that they've never built a tree hut or anything like a tree hut in their life. And I was like, not even mud kitchens, and only a few kids put their hand up for mud kitchens. I'm like, that was my childhood growing up, foraging into the forest and the Nahere.
That's true. You hit it. I think there's that fear of parents.
Yeah.
And exploration.
There's definitely some permissions that need to be given for kids to actually really explore and try all these things. They can be messy. They can try everything that they want to. Like, it's just really honestly giving them permission. I was walking up with my partner the other day in Mount Eden, and the funniest thing was everybody was looking at these kids bizarrely, but they were just naked frolicking on the mountain because their mum let them. That's all that needs to be. And, you know, if you remember from your childhood, you were naked at one point because your mum let you, and they were playing in mud piles. Like, that's like a great memory right there.
When you design new spaces, because your focus is sport, it's the roots between. So as placemakers or as designers, sure, you have the park there. So let's say we're talking about Glen Eden.
Yeah.
They're redesigning that whole space. There is some green areas between, let's say, the primary school and the village. And so it's thinking, if I'm a kid finishing school and I'm going to cross this way, how do I design safe crossings and a safe journey that accesses me without the help of an adult and fear of a car smashing me to play Monday to Friday, 3 to 5? Because right now it feels like it's almost designed out, the exploration.
It is.
And so we need to design it back in. And they have like the easiest routes to get.
They do. And most of it's flat. Most of it's crazy in Glen Eden. It's mostly flat. So what are the biggest factors that are hindering us? And you kind of have to question that. And I remember interviewing one of the local principals, and she's like, you know what's bizarre? On a weekend, I never see any of my kids out. And I live here. None of my kids are in their neighborhood spaces. So what's going on? And when you ask them, so we co-designed in the same school, we asked them and they all talked about safety and dodgy men, and I asked them to draw them and like get specific about it. And it's funny because you don't know how much is it guided by what their parents say to what they actually know.
But it's all the education around play, yeah. Right? So that's that layers.
It goes in layers.
But I think...
And also it's if a parent does want to let their child be free, it's educating the other parents and letting that happen, because we've got a lot of feedback before that parents do want their children to be free, but they don't want, for instance, Oranga Tamariki, like child services, coming in and calling them an hour later saying that their child's wandering around and questioning their parenting. So, yeah.
I guess it's like starting with the one day a month, but the real question is the focus of Hawaii Pie, this Good Place podcast, is how we design these welcoming, inclusive, safe places. And so that's one of the many layers is education.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking about education, so Play Week's coming up on the 15th of November to the 21st, and Sport New Zealand's leading it, and it's going to be great. And I love the theme this year. It's called Say Yes to Play. So it's really bridging the education gap for parents, really. Trying to get them to understand that sometimes you just need to say yes. Like you can put permission, you can put other things in, like you were saying, free people or free kids at a time, your rule of three. That could be advertised as well. There could be so many other things going on. But having, like, it's just a good win coming from a big national organization promoting that, and then them doing cross-government associations. So I think HPA is a part of this as well, which is Health Promotion and Agency. All these other government areas are all promoting it.
I just feel like just like the environment and for transport, which I've been working through a little bit more lately, it's education in the sense that we're at the precipice where the parents are the age where they walk to school and they played. And if we wait 10 more years to re-educate and remind those two taste, smells, feelings, we might run out of time because the 20-year-olds were driven to school and didn't play and had the Wi-Fi. So this is really a window of time where we need to push hard as a global society the benefits that we had.
Sure. Having my neighborhood street on the same street as my cousins, because we're Filipino, we want to live near each other. She's 14 now. But when I was younger on that street, I had heaps of friends. The generational effect is now that she's 14, you ask her, she doesn't have any friends in the neighborhood. It's all online. So you have to really question what's going on.
Yeah, I think, and the value of it, I think there's certain things you can't replace. It's the same with COVID and the same with promoting a street party. Person to person, how do we get back out there again, realize the benefits, and spread that message, right?
Yeah.
So any other Auckland City government people that are really removing barriers for you, like at a high level? So there's Jenna that filled out that form and really is helping change it. Anyone else in different agencies that are really just seeing a barrier and removing it?
Yeah. So, and like I probably name dropped before, and one of them is Jacqueline, and she's doing some good cross-government or cross-council work with some other departments that might or might not want to join her play group there. So just keep your tabs on what's going on there. She's working with Sherelle from Play Aotearoa as well, and Tracy Hodder, who's a Parks and Play Specialist in Council. So they're three great wahine trudging on to change policies in Council. Other great people would definitely be, if I wouldn't be in this role, if not for Scott McKenzie from Sport New Zealand. So he's been working in play for 12 years. He was in Play Aotearoa, and he wouldn't have ignited these types of roles across New Zealand if not for him constantly having a cup of coffee and a muffin with people, trying to secure funding, trying to change it. he was like the first play systems innovator, if you really had to think about it, just big and influencing. And yeah, if you think about regionally, Penny Horse is a great example. Our ex-mayor, I used to work with her and I love her dog. So shout out to little Ashley Bloomfield. But just her actions and trying to fight for policies like berm planting is amazing. And how do we continue with that shift in policy to try to get our neighbours and our communities to do berm planting more often? Because that's one of the big tools that help in connecting people. So like literally, if we had to draw an illustration about Penny Horse right now, it's she's the gate opener. She just opens gates. And that's why she was working with us for a couple of months. And she's just been good at it. And she just knows everyone and anyone. And it just makes sense to work with her when you want systems change. So,
and it's a trust in the gut.
Yeah.
You're not, instinct. You don't have a crazy idea. It's not that crazy. It's just, she doesn't see the problem. She sees the barrier she has to remove.
She does.
Like you're telling her a story. She's like, that's not, she immediately, it's like, she's already three steps ahead of you. Oh, I can see.
Yeah. And she's not afraid of bureaucracy. That's what's amazing about her. Like someone could easily see what she sees, but someone doesn't have the guts and tenacity like she does to open the gate.
And it's multiple gates, right? It's like, okay, that's not working. Let's try this one. And it's not, and if you don't get there, that's okay too. But to have someone at some point in your journey stop and even listen and give it breath is even enough sometimes.
Exactly. And that's why I'm crediting people like Jenna and Jacqueline for coming in and listening with the community and actually being in the same room with them instead of being that one person in the office and hearing it from one side of the convo.
Especially now with COVID, because so many things are digital. That's why I use Instagram, because some people have so many emails now because they're not in person anymore, right? Yep. So I'm often sending invitations on Instagram or Messenger because I don't want it to get lost.
Yeah.
And you have to be creative and open to everyone's COVID stress and response.
You
and
do. I think
it's the same in government, right?
It's the same.
Creative and helpful and solutions based,
but also a good listener. Like that's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really great. Well, anything else you want to add about your latest projects or anything we've missed?
Yes. So all I'm just going to do is a simple plug and just talk about Gear Up. And like I said, we've got 14 boxes that we're going to test. So watch out. So if you're in Tamaki, you can come down to West Auckland and trial some of the 14 boxes out there. Please don't steal. Just give them back. They're there to borrow and share and play. And if you're there internationally, we'll definitely have our stories uploaded on Sport Waitakere's website and their Facebook page and Healthy Families Facebook page probably. So yeah, keep tabs.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, having you here today has been really great. And tēnā koe, Bea. Thank you so much for your time and all the great mahi and work that you do.
Oh,
it's been lovely.
Thanks. No, thanks, Boopsie.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please share with a friend and let's continue to grow and seed new ways of playing and connecting in our own cities and across the world. Thank you for listening.